Hello, my lovely people. My name is Phoebe Jane, and this is the podcast for and about people in their 20s that are trying to beat the algorithm of life. Ever since I started podcasting, there's always someone I knew I wanted to do it with, but we live 7,000 kilometers away from each other. And it's been that way for 8 years, but we're actually friends for 14 years now, which is really long. I think that's also not very common. I don't know many people that are still friends with their childhood friends. So I think we have a lot to say about friendship. 14 years ago, that means we were 12.
12, literal children.
Which is a whole different phase. We've talked a lot about change and accepting change. I think it's like inevitable if you're friends with someone for 14 years for them to stay the exact same person. Yes. And I think sometimes for other people, it might be something hard to accept that they're like, they want things to constantly be the same, and sometimes that they can view change in a bad way. And I think it's all about growing apart or growing together.
Yeah, and that's how you get stuck in those like friendships that are only based on who you used to be. And I mean, it's great to have friendship based off of like just memories, but then granted, you nobody, especially us, we're not the same people that we used to be like 10 years ago. Or 12 years ago, and to like kind of just only talk about that and stay stuck in like who we used to be, it doesn't serve your friendship in any good way if you're like adults now, you know? I mean, it's cool to reminisce, but then it's like, okay, I'm 26. I don't really want to hear about what we used to do at 12 all the time, you know what I mean? So then you can appreciate those friendships, but also recognize that friendships that are only based off of like back then, they don't serve you.
Yeah, I have a really weird relationship with nostalgia. I've also talked about it here before. Like, I've really learned to, when I meet up with people from my past, to try and get to know who they are now or kind of like look forward. And when I meet new people, it's kind of nice to go back in time and see where you connect in your past.
Yeah.
But it's totally the opposite for people that have been in your life for a long time. Because I think as well, like, we're also not teenagers anymore. Like, there is kind of maybe this past version of you. And not everyone always wants to constantly be reminded of it. Not everyone always has the best memories. And I think that's the weird thing about if you have memories together, it's like there could be a positive aspect of it, but you never know exactly how that person perceived it.
Yeah, exactly. I think it also has to do with the good thing that we got to experience with our friendship was definitely like being aware of like everything that we went through, and it was like a lot. But not letting only those moments define our friendship. So then we very much grew up together after that. And I think that kind of salvaged our friendship so that we could do the long distance friendship thing, you know? Because I very much wanted to be a part of like your life when you moved away and see what you're going to do. And I wanted to be there for that BB, you know, not just the old BB. And just keep holding you back, because that's not what friendships are about. I wanted to see you go forward and like become who you are today. And I'm still very excited about who you're going to be in like 5 years. Like, I'm excited to get to know you at 30.
Yeah.
I'm very excited.
Yeah, I think that's a really important skill. And you know, how lucky am I to have friends that, you know, are there for that change. And needless to say, in other relationships as well, like, sometimes that change has caused things to like drift away or like not click as much. And that's also okay. I think I remember being teenagers and being a very people pleaser. I've talked about this before. Like, I wanted to be good with everyone. I think the older I get, the more I'm like, no, like, I don't need to be this like best friend to everyone, because it doesn't have to click with everyone. And it won't, especially. So,
but you know, I think you may have seen yourself like that. And it makes me kind of sad to hear that you thought of yourself that way, because you being a people pleaser was so unnecessary, because generally, like, everybody loved you. Like, it was so effortless to like you. You were such a likable person. I want to say for the most part, you were I think we were very likable, especially you. I'm not as approachable, I think, but you were definitely like that very friendly and the outgoing person. That cool girl, you know? So you being a people pleaser wasn't necessarily very necessary, because people naturally gravitated towards you. And then that kind of helped me be a little more like, I want to say a bit nicer. People still don't find me very approachable.
I sometimes felt like you were a little bit of like a big sis as well, like a little bit of protective.
Yeah.
As well.
We're very protective of each other because at the end of the day, being a teenager back then in the early 2010s, that shit was brutal.
Yeah, like I would love to have like conversations with teenagers now because I feel like there's a whole other new aspect of social media as well, which in our time kind of was coming up. Yeah. It was already like a really like living hell. Like yeah. People really took advantage of it. Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about how it was to be a teenager and how sometimes it felt like problems were 10 times bigger than I would maybe perceive now. But I think it also has to do with like it is your first time sometimes experiencing something. First time experiencing betrayal. And I think now maybe I'm not so surprised anymore.
Yeah, you grow and you learn. And I think the thing is back then, you didn't have like a lot of access to resources like you can learn about. Like nowadays you have like, yeah, TikTok teaches people a lot, I think. Because then that it's a platform that consists of like older people and younger people. So then the older people can tell the younger people to like watch out for this, or you know, these are like the signs of a, you know, manipulator or a groomer and stuff like that. But back then it was just like, you know, especially here, there was like little information on like feminism and stuff like that. And I think we found our way to it. A lot of people still at our age, especially, they weren't doing the whole feminism thing. It was still very fresh and new for here back then. And for us to like still identify back then as feminists up until today, it's crazy. But I'm happy that we got to do that and learn.
Yeah, I think I learned a lot about womanhood in that time of being a teenager, and also the unfairness about being a woman. I think the biggest like fact or proven thing for me was when I remember guys shaming me for doing something that they did 10 times more.
Yeah.
For example, when I had my first kiss and the question started popping up of people asking like, how many guys have you kissed?
Oh my God, like you're such a slut. Like you kissed one guy and you were like a slut already. And it's like,
I think it was really intense. I think like, but now to look back, I'm like, she was so young to be experiencing that kind of like shaming.
Yeah.
And I wonder if it's...
And we took it so seriously too. Like then the first thing that you would want to think about is, oh no, I have to be like that girl that nobody touches and stuff like that. And until you realize, you're also going to get shamed for that. And people will make up lies about you. And so at the end of the day, it really didn't matter. And then it's like, what is the right way of being a girl? Like, how do you be a girl and like not face criticism or have people talking shit about you? Like, there is no right way of being a girl. And we couldn't figure it out back then. I still don't have the answer today because there is no right way of being like a woman either at this age. I think it's just something that we're always going to have to deal with, unfortunately, despite even having a Barbie movie.
Imagine that Barbie movie like back then. That's like, even now it's like, yeah, yeah.
And people are like making jokes about it and completely missing the whole point of it. And I think that's just the whole, it just explains it. We're never going to be understood as women, so I'm happy though that we kind of opened our way up to being feminists because it saved us a whole lot of learning in the, you know, adult part of it.
Yeah, I think it was a concept of like you said, like understanding that I'm never going to do it right anyway. I think that somehow gave peace, even though I did have a lot of moments where I wanted to like prove myself.
Yeah.
Or I think it was always something natural in me to recognize like a social problem and be like, oh my God, this isn't right. And I'm probably not the only one that's dealing with it right now. And I think that's what I see back now in my work as well. You know, always finding something that I'm like, I'm probably not the only one dealing with this.
I think what I love to see now, especially, is the whole girl supporting girls movement. Like, I really stand on being a girl's girl. You know, I have always had like girlfriends. I never really had like guy groups of friends, like, or I don't really want to even say that I have guy friends because I'm dead on just a girl's girl. And I love that more girls are like, you know, going towards that too, because back then it was like very much of like cliques and pitting each other against like, you know, unnecessary stuff. And it was so hard being a girl.
Yeah, I think you always told me this thing about being a girl's girl, and I felt like deep inside I'm like, yeah, no, I like agree. But I think recently I've definitely been proven that I'm a girl's girl, and I have very mixed feeling about if guys and girls can even be friends, to what capacity. I haven't met really any guy which I'm like, wow, like I can be like best friends with you. Sometimes I wonder like, oh, I hope I get proven wrong day, but other times I'm like, I also accept what you say, and you say like, maybe we are just like girls. And
I think at the end of the day, like, the truth of the matter really is, it comes down to almost no guy really understand what it means to be a girl and what you go through and your feelings. Like, they can be like empathetic towards it, and
it's a biological thing as well. I want to like read more books about that to like understand it more, like a man's mind and everything like that. It's not like I'm blaming them as well. I do think it's a biological thing as well. But yeah, I've always felt like dramatic around guys, and when I talk to girls, they're like, oh my god, same. Like, I also think about that, you know. And with guys, it's always like, you're overthinking, you're thinking way too deep about this. And
so they think that we react more on emotions.
Yeah.
And it could be true. I don't know. I don't really know the biological aspect of it. But I also think they have to understand that they grew up in a generation, or they're still growing up in this whole way of thinking of that guys can't really express themselves. And because they have to, like, hold everything in, and they don't learn how to, like, properly express themselves, like, they'll never really be able to talk about how they feel in a healthy way. So it's just them reacting in the moment, and then they're thinking, no, that's the best way to react, but really it's a whole lot of nothing. Like, you're not really explaining and processing your feelings as it should. And it's, again, not blaming them either. It's just like the society way of them growing up, just like society made us grow up in a certain way too. But we can do better. Like, we can do better.
I'm so interested in that. Like, the whole, I've had guys telling me that it's a legit thing. Like, they legit feel like they cannot show, they call it weakness.
Yeah, like, cry. Just, literally, honey, cry. Yeah. If you gotta cry, babe, just cry. Like,
we've talked to, as well about, it's a thing on the internet where people are saying that now when we're in our 20s and going to 30s, that guys are like finally like maybe expressing like some wisdom or some thoughts or stuff like that. And I think a lot of women see those things and read those things and just feel like, holy shit, that's something I felt when I was like 12.
Yeah.
Like, literally.
And we were openly expressing that too. It's like, it's that meme.
Yeah.
An 11-year-old girl on Tumblr going all sentimental on her shit, and then someone, a guy in his like 30s is like, then realizing, no, like, and it's been there. Like, wow. Whoa, that's so deep.
Yeah,
we've been going through that.
Yeah. I don't know. I find it really interesting where the you can draw the line between, is it a social thing or is it actually a biological thing? I'm really interested in that.
Yeah,
but I do feel bad for them sometimes, and I think that is exactly what sometimes makes it hard to be friends with them. I think us both being in long relationship with our partners, I think that is a different kind of connection, because you're so much together and you have more time to... You guys need time to express your feelings and stuff. And I think because you have that time, then it becomes a bit easier to understand them. But it's with friendship, you just have less time, especially now you're 20. So I think it is definitely... It's been challenging for me to have guy friends. And I think I've always had like a longing for it, and I think you've always been like this living proof of like, you don't need that, you know, you don't need this, like, I don't even know what it is. If it's like an extra validation I'm seeking, I don't know what it is.
Do you think maybe it has also to do with like genuinely wanting to give them like the benefit of the doubt, like there are good guys out there, and there are, like, we both have really amazing partners, and the thing is we kind of also made best friends out of them.
Yeah.
But then at the end of the day, just like they need sometimes to talk about guy things with their guy friends, we also can't talk about girl things with them. Like, we can, but then they'll only understand like up until here. But then when I talk to you, you get it. Like,
I I'm like, getting out of my time.
Yeah.
I think it helps to.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you can pull up all the books and you'll be like, yeah, this is, you feel this way because.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also don't feel like every guy out there is evil at all. There are definitely good guys out there. I just think that there's a whole, like, room to improve and grow. There is a whole lot of room to grow. I don't know if it has to do with, like, the whole frontal lobe developing thing. For them, they apparently develop it way later in life. We develop it at, like, 25. And it's weird. I don't know if you felt it, like, that switch.
Turning 25. I feel like definitely I agree that, like, your early 20s are definitely different than your later 20s. Oh, I feel like I'm going to be 30 and look back at... You know when you, like, look when you're a teenager and you're like, I'm smart. Like, I actually know my shit. And then you're in your 20s, you're like, girl, you didn't know shit. I'm so afraid that my 30-year-old thought I was going to be like, girl, like...
I feel like... I think we will be okay, though. I told you not to come.
I'm trying so hard.
I think because the frontal lobe's going to be a bit more developed and we're going to have our shit a little bit, you know, put together when we're 30. And now I feel like I'm so different than who I was last year, even, and 2 years ago. And yeah, yep. 10 years ago, I don't even know her.
I don't know either. I think that's, yeah, that's also the hard thing about long friendships, right? That change, again, that we talked about.
And it's also grieving sometimes if you're growing at different rates, right? So you left at 17.
Yeah, I left to the Netherlands when I was 17.
And I felt like I had to grieve that version of you because leaving at 17 meant that you were going to live alone. You were going to start a whole lot of responsibilities. And me at 17, I wasn't there. And I was still very much a kid. And you were like going into like adulthood. And I was like, no, like, I don't know her anymore. I can't relate to you anymore. And I was like, I'm losing that part of you. And it took me a while to, you know, get there. But once I did, I was like, I love who you are because I'm her too. And we're going through the same things again. And I think it's important to like grieve who you were and grieve who your best friend was, but then also wanting to get to know them again. And the thing is, I didn't necessarily think that we had to grieve each other at 12 or at 13 or because we grew up together. Mm-hmm. And then growing apart was hard. That was like...
Yeah. I guess for me, it was like a really exciting time and there was a lot of newness happening in my life. So I feel like for a long time, I maybe didn't maybe feel like you were grieving. But I think that reality definitely hit me at some point. You know, you meet people, you meet great people, you meet not so great people. And I tell you all the time, like at the end of the day, like there is not going to be something that can replace that connection. And somehow we always find each other again. I think that's really special. And I think it's also nice that you kind of like gave me that space to grow as well. Because I think, yeah, like sometimes distance makes you even closer, you know, like taking that time apart, taking that break or whatever you need.
Yeah.
Even though I can imagine it can be hard.
It can. And I still very much think it's very hard because there are days where I'm like going through it and I just want to be laying in bed next to you and watching Mean Girls and like eating and just venting and crying and being a girl. And then I remember, oh, she's not here. I have a car now and I can go to her, but she's not here, you know, like,
yeah.
But then when we do get moments like this, I really, really value them.
Yeah. Yeah. Like two things. I think it's weird because there are things that we dreamed about. Like you having a car sounds really like simple, but like those are things we always dreamed about. And we always thought like that would change our life. Like,
when we get a car,
it's over. It's
like
over.
We're never going home again.
Yeah.
Night drives and we're home at like 11.
Literally. It's not what we expected.
No. And you would think, nah, we have a car, we're going to. Gonna go out, we're gonna have fun, you know. And we went to the game room and had ice cream.
Literally. To circle back on like moving away and having that like exciting time of moving away, and when you're 17, you're still in that idea of like, oh my god, I'm gonna make so many new friends, blah blah. And it's like this romanticized fantasy of how like college is going to be and how your like 20s is going to be. And I think it really hit me so hard that like, holy shit, like friendship has changed now forever. Yeah. And it's way more intense as well. Like the friendship I do have are like deep, meaningful connections. Yeah. And they're not like little things thrown around or like, I think I remember having like friends just because like, oh, like you want this from me, I want this from you. Like that's why we're friends.
Transactional friendships are very real and it's good to like admit it and acknowledge it for what it is. Like I have a really hard time calling people friends when I know that I don't talk to them. I don't really care to see them. I'll say hi to them. I think we're good and everything, but I don't necessarily call them friends. I call them people that I know, and I'm very selective with who I call friends. Not having a lot of time and stuff creates having smaller circles. And the people that I do have as friends, like, you know, you, Wingsan, Esa, I have some really good friends that I met at school too. Being selective and having a small circle means that you can spend really, you know, your most quality time with them. And choosing,
yeah,
you know, choosing who you want to see and hang out with and not just being friends of the world, you know?
Yeah, I have a mixed feeling with that because on one hand, I think I became so protective of my energy. Mm-hmm. And I've talked about this on the podcast before, but I know who's right for me, who's good for me. I know who's going to like uplift me. But of course, people have their own lives. You, for example, live far away. And there are moments where I'm not going to have access to my friends or like be able to hang out with them, and it's been like younger me would have just gone into bad company, and now I really force myself to be alone, and that can be really lonely sometimes.
It can, but it's also like, you know, that at the end of the day, you protecting yourself and being alone means that you're gonna really, really understand what kind of company you crave and want and what feeds your soul, you know? So I think I spend a lot of time being alone too. And you know this, you were always asking me, what are you doing? I'm like, at home. She's like, of course, you even take the sun. I think we grew into being homebodies, really.
I don't know. Sometimes it is confronting. Like, I do get, like, when everything becomes quiet, I feel like my thoughts can become really loud. And sometimes that's, like, hard.
That's when you get a mini fridge.
Oh, shit. You got a mini fridge in your...
For my Coke?
Now you're not even going to exit your room.
I really didn't think about that. I have everything that I need in my room now. Yeah.
Oh, now talking about friends as well, it reminded me of this fact, to me it's a fact, that men label friendship in a whole different way. Mm-hmm. Like, they could see this guy they met up, like, with 10 fucking years ago, and they're like, that's my bro. Like, that's my friend. I think maybe girls are better at, like, letting go as well.
Yeah.
But needless to say, I think we also don't have the type of friendship where we need to text all day.
No.
And I think it's very essential because I think it wouldn't last. If we have to expect...
It's so healthy.
Yeah.
It's good because it's really no expectations and it's not exhausting. It's exhausting having someone that needs your attention all the time.
I think I've also accepted the type of people for who they are in the sense of like how they text and how they communicate. I think that's really important when you get older. Like, I think when you're younger, like, I can change them. I can change them and like tell them what's right or wrong or how I want things to be. But I think the older you get, the more you're like, okay, I accept. You can say your boundaries and you can say, you know, how you feel about certain things, but we're too old to be like changing people now.
If you really value a friendship, like you genuinely want that person in your life, want like to keep the friendship real and going, you have to understand what type of person they are. If they're a person that you need to talk to like every day, then water that friendship and talk to them every day. But then like if you don't and you don't, you know, talk to them every day and that's what they want, admit that like you're being a bad friend. Like acknowledge it. Like if you're genuinely going to ignore people, like your friends, if you're not going to answer them, and you know, stuff can happen, you're busy, there are things going on, maybe you're just not in like the state to talk, maybe you just want to be left alone. If you do that, acknowledge that you're being a shit friend. And I think I realized that too, where I know that I am probably a bad friend to people sometimes. Taking accountability for it really matters because I know, you know, tomorrow when I see them on the street, if they don't want to say hi to me, I have to be like, yeah, you know, that's on me. That's definitely on me. There are friendships that you want to water and there are some that you don't, but then don't get upset about it, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a big lesson that I learned from you is like admitting when you're being a bad friend or admitting your mistakes. I think there have been moments where I just knew like I was in the mental space to be there for someone how I usually am. And that's not something I would usually admit. And I think now I've really learned to admit that. But it's like you said, there have also been people that I'm like, holy shit, like they were so nice to me. And I was like not there for them or I wasn't listening. Sometimes I still don't understand why I do that. I think that's still kind of a mystery to me as well. Is it protecting my time and energy? I don't know because it's not like they've done anything particularly wrong.
We're still figuring that part out. It's a weird thing because they can be very nice people. You genuinely love and care for them, but you can't feed their soul at the moment. Like you can't water the friendship. Like it just ain't the bite.
Yeah.
I think also I've learned that if you genuinely fuck up as a friend and you still want to salvage the friendship, you can by apologizing. Like a lot of people are like, no, that friendship is done. Like there's nothing we can do to fix it. If you really want to fix a friendship, you can, but you have to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And it has to be both sided because if it's only one being like, I'm sorry, and the other one doesn't want to accept your apology, then you know, at least you tried. But don't expect people to just forgive you in the long run. You generally have to talk about it.
Oh, really? Like communicating is a big thing. Mm-hmm. It's a big thing. And I think speaking your feelings is a big thing.
Our fallout was like a long fallout.
Yeah.
It was longer than we expected. But then I genuinely like realized I need her in my life. And I have to talk to her. Like you have to be a big girl and just talk. And it's stupid because that one talk fixed everything. And then it was as if nothing ever happened. I don't even remember why we fell out. And it's so stupid because that was like literally like what? A year of friendship that we wasted. So it's good to apologize, you know?
Holding grudges is something I've also just been doing less and less. But I think I've also accepted that if I knew that a certain person wasn't meant to be in my life, I used to be that person always wanted to know why and I wanted to have this big ass closure conversation. But I've really learned that it doesn't have to be like that. I don't need to seek that. You don't need to seek that perfect ending. And that it's okay to let people go as well.
And people don't owe us that either. And we don't owe anybody some things either. You know, it is what it is because they are also in that position of, you know, this friendship no longer serves me. So I don't really care to like mend it. And that's fine. The thing is, boundaries. As an adult, understanding boundaries and not just expecting that things are going to go your way. And also knowing what you're comfortable doing and saying what you're comfortable taking is very different.
Yeah, I've definitely learned in the last few years, like how to say my boundary, how to communicate it in the right way. And how to kind of like signal if someone is respecting those and not, yeah. Can you recall any, if I say like toxic friendships, do you have something that comes to mind? So I feel like people often ask me like, oh, I'm in like a toxic friendship, but like if I don't have them, I don't have anyone. So they kind of like stay in it and linger.
Yeah, I could recall like toxic friendships where it would either just be doing things that they want to do just to make them happy. It can be someone that's completely like only in love with the idea of who you used to be and they only want to know that person or be with that person, but you're like an adult, you're different from that person. Like there are like a lot of definitions for what a toxic friendship can be. It could be someone possessive, it could be someone that really doesn't give a shit about you, that's not even a friend. I don't think that I have any toxic friendships now because I keep my circle so small. Mm-hmm. And I'm very selective of like who I consider friends. And as soon as I feel like if I were put in that position, I also feel like, okay, no, I cut them off immediately. Yeah. Like it's kind of scary sometimes how fast.
I listened to a podcast recently that talked about being more open to talk to people because you never know what kind of lesson they can teach you.
Yeah.
But I feel, I think it's just kind of like a defense mechanism of like protecting yourself. But I do think this is maybe something typical for when you're younger.
Yeah.
Because I think there's also like social pressure to have friends or to like be seen with friends. And
yeah,
I think when you're older, there isn't that. In high school, there is that, but in college, like, people don't give a fuck. Like, you sit alone, and, like, it's just, you know?
Yeah.
But I can see how it can be scary to be like, oh, shit, if I cut these people off, I'm going to be alone. But I think it's also the maybe afraid to be alone, you know? If you've never been alone, then...
Especially if you don't have, like, a partner there.
Yeah.
I can imagine that it's, like, really scary.
How do you experience... Because... I've had friends that are like, yeah, like, when I have a friend and they got a boyfriend, now they're a completely different person. I can't be friends with them anymore. I think a lot of our friends have boyfriends now. And yeah, I feel like in the beginning it's definitely something that I think as girlfriends, you're also very protective. And you're always the one that's like, I don't trust him. You're always like, I need to scan this guy. Like, I don't trust this guy. And I feel like it's natural for people to change a bit as well. Especially if you... for living together, if it really becomes something serious, but...
I want you to tell me that. Because I got into, like, the long-term relationship a little before you did. And before that, we were, like, inseparable. Yeah. We were together, like, every day. We did everything together. We were literally, like, a package deal. Like, where she goes, I go.
Yeah, I think maybe that was a little bit of grieving for me. Like, realizing, like, okay, like, accepting the fact that... you won't have that time anymore for me. And, like, this is kind of, like, a new reality. I very quickly accepted that it was, like, an actual good guy, I think. Yeah. Good thoughts about this guy. So I just knew, like, okay, this is going to be something. And this is going to be a new reality. Yeah, I think it's grieving, but I think it's also a bit of, like, you have to be happy for someone.
Yeah.
Right? Even if, like, something does change, it's, like, okay, then... what are you going to do? Be happy for them and still spend that time that you have together? Or are you going to be like a selfish bitch and you're going to be like, no, I do need a friend that has that time for me?
But I remember also telling him, it's me and Bibi, like, she's my number one. Like, she's my bitch, you know? She's everything to me. And, you know, just so you know, she's first. I remember telling him that. And it was like that for a while, but then I think that same year you moved away and then it got really lonely. So then I really only had him here. But then I realized, you know, you can have a boyfriend, you can have a best friend and give them the same amount of love, you know, in their own way. When you're a teenager, it's hard, especially when you're so close to each other and you do everything together. I can imagine that you get that sense of, oh no, she's different now. She's not going to like hang out with me anymore. And there's no time for me. And it's hard. I get it. As an adult, it sounds kind of stupid, you know? Because you generally, you learn time management, you know?
Yeah.
Quality time with them. Quality time with like your best friend. Time management is key. So, you know, if you're a teenager and your best friend just got a boyfriend... time management, because you have time as a teenager.
Yeah, and I think like it. What? I think usually you also need to give someone space in the beginning because like entering a relationship is a big thing.
Yeah, it's huge.
So yeah, I think allow them to have that time with that person as well. You know, your best friend getting a boyfriend is maybe one of the first changes that may happen, but trust me, there are going to be more changes. They're going to get a new job or they're going to go to a different college. You're going to move to a different country. There's going to be a bunch of different changes. So
bigger changes. So them getting a boyfriend is like the least of your worries.
Yeah.
Didn't we have like that question? The one, what was like a worry? What was something that you think is huge to worry about as a teenager? And then that you realize doesn't really matter when you're an adult.
So what are things that feel very permanent when you're a teenager, but then you grow old and you realize it was just temporary? I think grades at school. That's a big one. Like if I got like a 9 or a 5.5, like, and I was a school girl, so
you were a school girl. I feel like I was such a class clown. For me also, like getting bad grades, I was like, shit, I'm done for. Like my life is over. I'm never going to get into a good college. And meanwhile, I was like, at Colegio. I think sometimes fights with your friends, you feel like it's
not.
If you, again, like if you really, really want to make it work, you can talk about it. It'll be okay. Like 9 times out of 10, I'll be okay.
Yeah, like the grudges are huge when you're young.
Yeah, it's like beef. Like, you have eternal beef.
Yeah, it's like really huge.
Yeah. I remember, like, I think we felt it a lot that a lot of girls didn't necessarily like us. And we automatically, our response would be like, well, I don't like you either. And then now when I see them, I'm like, oh, she's so nice. I don't even know why. It's,
yeah.
Stuff like that is so not permanent, Mania. Your feelings as a teenager would be, it's not permanent. None of it. None of it, really.
Yeah, feelings. I think feelings towards your parents.
Bambi.
I was just thinking about that today. Like, wow, like, I was such a hell teenager when it came to my parents. Like, I was just thinking, like, if I had a bad day, I would not tell them, like, hey, sorry, I'm having a bad day. I would speak.
Yeah, like, I don't talk to that guy. I'm my parents are Aruban. They beat my ass. Joke. Pero, no, I would definitely, like, react very teenage angsty. Take it out on them. Slam doors. The feelings that you have towards your parents, they're not permanent. You might even regret them.
Yeah, you might regret them. And I was thinking about this, that when you're young and you get, like, lectured about something, that, like, it just feels like unsolicited advice. And then when you grow older, you sometimes literally use that advice as, like, your life motto.
9 out of 10 times, they are right. Like, all of the lectures I've gotten back then, I would be like, you don't know. You don't understand. Like, this is not a phase, Mom. Like, you don't know me. Like, this is, it's different. No, it's not different.
Yeah,
it's not. They're right.
Yeah, and I think also there have been things that were wrong. I think becoming a young adult is like kind of like screening the whole situation, screening your childhood, and like thinking about what are things I'm going to take with me.
Yeah.
I suppose I even read something on Reddit where it said, when you're a baby, you think your parents know everything. Then you become a teenager, you think your parents don't know anything. And then you become a young adult, and then you kind of pick and choose and see, like, what is right for me? What are the mistakes they made that I learned from? That's a really, really interesting time, I think. So, yeah, I think as a teenager, you just think your parents are wrong about everything. And
I'm very grateful now that my parents, especially my mom, was as involved and cared for me as much as she did back then, considering there were, like, a lot of kids that you just know that their mom really didn't give a fuck about what they were doing, who they were with, when, you know. I think having someone that involved, it didn't, back then I would consider it like, no, very annoying, like, let me live. But now I'm like, she was protecting me.
Yeah,
she's a mom, she's a woman. Mm-hmm. she's a woman. She knew, but she couldn't tell me because she didn't want to ruin, like, the image of the world, I think, back then. Because she could have, like, just straight up told me, like, you know,
yeah,
the things that she had gone through, the things that she knows.
Yeah.
But she kind of also didn't want me to have, like, this perception of being scared of the world. She also didn't want me to, like, experience it for myself. She was kind of protecting me from it.
Yeah. And it just feels like a restriction when you're young.
See, it's kind of also the you can't tell me what to do thing. You wanting to just do whatever you want. And I get it.
Yeah, and I think when you make the mistake, you're like, oh, that's what she was, like, trying to warn me about.
But even so, you don't, like, acknowledge the mistake immediately. Yeah, It takes years.
Yeah. It really does. Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Try not to be an asshole towards your parents.
Yeah, that's a big thing.
That's, like, a huge... If I could tell a teenager something... Like, all of you're feeling a lot. There's, like, a lot of changes going on. You're still figuring out yourself and stuff. And you feel like the world is, you know, intense, and it is. But there's, you've got a big storm coming. You've got a big ass storm coming. So just be a good kid. Listen to your parents. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I think some things just feel very intense and like the end of the world.
I think I wish that I communicated more to my mom.
Me too.
Because then I think there would have been way better trust and a better bond between us too. I would have understood her better, I think.
And she would have understood me.
Yeah. She would have been like, okay, we could do, like, compromises. Money. Okay, sure. She would not have let me, like, come home at 5 a.m. But we could have compromised something. But as a teenager, it's either, like, your way or no way. And you really can't think about... You can't go, like, through life thinking like that either, no?
Yeah.
You can't. Because as an adult, you very little will get the chance to have it go your way. life was not going to go your way, man.
Yeah, I think when you're a teenager, all you want to do is be alone. And I think when you're a young adult, you miss those connections. And then you start longing for the connections that were maybe, they were very natural then. They were very, it didn't take effort. And now it takes effort. Now it takes effort to see your friends. It takes effort to, meet up or have quality time with your parents. I was talking to a friend the other day and about having quality time with your parents, especially if you've moved away. And they're like, yeah, like going grocery shopping is like a quality time for me. And I was like, yeah, like when I was a kid, like I would really complain about that. Like, don't take me to the grocery store.
The grocery store? No, I, like, genuinely, it's not embarrassing to be seen with your mom. Like, honestly, I'm very happy. I'm such a daddy's girl. I used to have, when I went to Mabo, my dad, I would ask him to bring me, like, breakfast. And he would go to Superfood, get me, like, a nice fresh pastéchi, fresh orange juice, and, like, literally walk into the school and pose in front of everyone and give me my breakfast, lunch, whatever. And, like, give me a kiss and go. And everyone would be like, that's so embarrassing. And I'd be like, what? And then they'll be like, because your dad's here. I'm like, my dad loves me. Growing a little bit older and maturing and realizing that your parents doing stuff for you is not embarrassing.
Yeah.
I love that.
Being seen with your parents or having them, like, not even call you out, but, like, doing, like, love things that show love.
That's not embarrassing. Like, I love that. Yeah. I love that.
It's love, you know? I think the thing about being a teenager, like, transitioning from caring about what people think to, like, not caring at all. Like, of course, I still care. Like, it's a human thing to care about what people say, and that keeps us socially engaged as humans. But, like, it's very extreme when you're a teenager.
Us realizing the power of not giving a fuck changes everything for us.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of girls can relate, like, even looks-wise, how you went to school, like, how much effort you put in.
It's just how it is.
I think we've been talking for an hour. I told you, like, I've been telling you, like, when I ever thought about doing a podcast with someone, I always said it was you.
I always wanted to do it with you. Like, it was kind of also, like, a dream for me to do a podcast with you, being, like, have a podcast of our own. I think having a connection with someone so naturally and not having to do the whole, who are you? Tell me about yourself. What's your thing? Like, not having that and just having that instant connection is amazing. I love it.
Yeah.
It's like my best friend, you know?
Yeah.
Who better than to, like, talk about real shit with than your best friend?
Exactly. Yeah, I'm really curious if people can see that connection or hear that in the conversation we had, but
I love it. I love you.
I love you too. All right. Let me know what you guys thought of this episode. Please rate the podcast on Spotify. And I'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye.